Welcome to Clinical Conversations. I'm Joey Elia for the NEJM Group. Earlier this week, the New England Journal of Medicine published an article that apparently describes a genetic pathway that can lead toward obesity in one direction and away from it in the other. We're fortunate to have one of the pathfinders with us today. Senior author Dr. Manolis Kellis is a professor in MIT's Computer Science Department and a member of the Broad Institute, a joint venture of Harvard and MIT. Welcome, Dr. Kellis.
Thank you very much, Joe. It's a pleasure to be here.
For my sake, let's oversimplify the discussion since I'm not a doctor. This pathway that you've described seems to me to start in the middle or to be a kind of a fork on a path. In one direction lies obesity, and in the other, a leanness that's not due to diet or exercise. The difference and therefore the direction taken relies on how the body's fat cells handle energy. Is that a fair oversimplification?
That's absolutely right, Joe. So traditionally, obesity has been thought of as a very simple difference between how much we eat and how much we exercise. Calories in, calories out. It's a very simple equation. The problem, however, with any engineered or real-life system is that there's a third component to every energy equation because the systems are not perfect. And that third component is energy lost. And how do we lose energy? We lose energy as heat. And here's what's really interesting here. Our body, it turns out, has a switch that it can tune to decide whether we're going to keep the excess calories after a meal as lipids inside our fat cells, or whether we're going to burn them away as heat in a process known as thermogenesis or heat generation.
Mm-hmm.
And what we found is a genetic switch which underlies the strongest genetic association with obesity in the FTO region,
okay,
which has been the subject of just intense scrutiny over the years.
People understand that there are various kinds of fat cells. Can you sort of review those for us?
So most of the world by now has heard about these two types of fat. There's the good fat and the bad fat.
Mm-hmm.
The bad fat are the big white fat cells, and they're big and white because they store a lot of lipids. These are the energy stores inside our body. And when individuals are obese, it's usually the white fat that has expanded both in the number of cells as well as in the size of these cells. But there's another type of fat that was recently recognized in the last, 10, 15 years only, which is brown fat. And brown fat plays a very big role in mice and in small mammals to keep them warm. But in humans, it only plays a role when you're in early stages of your life. But as an adult, you only have a small patch of brown fat. And here's what's very interesting. The white fat cells are very different developmentally from the brown fat cells. The brown fat cells are, in fact, more closely related to muscle.
Mm-hmm.
And they're full of mitochondria, and they're rich in vasculature, and they actually help burn energy, just like muscle helps burn energy. But there's a third type of fat that was, again, recently recognized, and these are known as beige adipocytes or bright adipocytes, and these actually are more closely related to their function of brown adipocytes, but developmentally they're more closely related to the white adipocytes.
Huh.
And this pathway is actually very closely tied to our research because the genetic switch that we found seems to be switching between white adipocytes and beige adipocytes. And that's a very big deal because it basically tells us that we can actually perhaps transform some of our white fat stores into energy burning fat stores by increasing the proportion of these beige cells.
Now let me ask a question about the path that you found. There are, and it's genetic, but it all hinges on a single, it's called a SNP, a single nucleotide polymorphism, that either allows repression of two genes or enables the expression of these two genes. Can you explain that a bit?
So the genetic signal underlying our discovery was in fact discovered back in 2007. So as you know, genome-wide association studies have scanned the human genome for genetic differences between individuals that are associated with phenotypic differences between these individuals. They're known as GWAS for genome-wide association studies, and there has been hundreds of studies carried out with numbers of individuals in the cohort ranging in the tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands. And the beauty of genetics, the power of genetics, is that it works like an all-powerful oracle that can tell you this region of your genome plays a role in that particular disease. But it's also a capricious oracle because it will not tell you anything more. It will not tell you how that genetic difference acts, how it, which cell type it even functions in. It won't tell you anything about the mechanism. And the world basically has been searching for the mechanism underlying this FTO region, which was renamed fat and obesity associated. But the efforts came back empty-handed. And the reason is that the dogma around obesity has always been that simple equation that I told you at the beginning, energy in, energy out. And what controls energy in and energy out? Well, that's the brain. It's our appetite, it's our satiety, it's our propensity to exercise. And that has been the focus around the war on obesity over the last many years, basically teaching people how to eat healthier, how to exercise more, how to stay active. And that's extremely important. But our pathway, turns out, functions independently of the brain. And that's a little bit of a game changer because it means that perhaps there are therapeutic avenues that can work directly in our fat cells.
Why did it take 7 years to discover this?
Well, there are many reasons why it took so long. And one of them is because people were really trying to find an effect in the brain. And frankly, there was none. There's no expression change that's significant or substantial anywhere in the vicinity in the brain. We took a different approach. We basically said, let's now look at the non-coding genome. So as you know, 98.5% of our genome does not code for proteins. All of the 20,000 proteins in our body are encoded in only 1.5% of the genome. And the control switches that govern how these genes get utilized are hidden somewhere in that other 98.5%. So what my group has been doing over the last, 10 plus years as part of a large international effort has really been to try and chart this non-coding genome, to try to annotate what are the control switches in each one of our cell types. And earlier this year, we published this roadmap epigenomics project that actually provided such a map in more than 100 different cell types telling us where are these control regions active, and to actually try to guess what are the cell types underlying obesity, the first thing we did is just look at these maps. And what he told us is that there's this master control switchboard that sits right in this obesity-associated region of FTO, and it acts specifically in the precursor cells that give rise to white adipocytes. And this control region is 12,000 nucleotides long, and it's remarkably long. And if you look at the brain, these regions are much shorter. They're on the order of like a few hundred nucleotides. So this first hint basically told us, hey, maybe we shouldn't be looking at the brain. Maybe we should be looking at fat cells themselves.
So you found the single nucleotide polymorphism that either enables the expression of two genes or tends to disable their expression. Is that the key to this research finding?
So that's a great question. So the region itself that's associated with obesity is very long. It spans 47,000 letters of the DNA, and it contains within it 89 common variants that are all co-inherited, and therefore if you have one of these variants, chances are you have another one of these variants. And that makes it very difficult to figure out which is the nucleotide difference, the single letter, that's responsible for the association, or whether there are in fact multiple letters that must act together to drive the association. And this is where the work of Melina Klausnitzer, the first lead author of this paper, that's where Melina's work comes in, because she actually developed a computational method that tries to predict what are the nucleotide positions, what are the letters that are important in a particular region based on their evolutionary conservation between different species. And when she ran her program on this region, it came up with a prediction of a single nucleotide variant, RS1421085, that changes a T into a C in the individuals that are showing this association with obesity. And she basically predicted that we could narrow down these 47,000 nucleotides and these 89 common variants into a single letter in our DNA.
And she did, because by manipulating that single letter, you were able to change the expression of those IRX3 and IRX5 genes. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. So, I mean, another, you know, much simpler question would be, so what does this letter change do?
Yeah. And so describe that.
And that's sort of part of the challenge of understanding the non-coding genome. Great, you have that letter. Even if you predict that that single letter is important, how do you go about figuring out where it's connected to? So the very simple analogy that I'm going to give is a switch on the wall. Mm-hmm. There's a big white switch, and you can flip it up or down. And when you flip it, you'd like to know what light bulbs turn on. So you have to trace the wires behind the wall to find the light bulbs. And you also need to understand whose finger flips that switch. Where is the driver regulator that actually flips the switch? And that's what Melina did. She basically said, based on the change of that single nucleotide, are there any genes nearby that change in expression? And for the genes nearby, we actually said that it might actually not be one of the nearby genes. It could be a faraway gene, which is actually folded up in three dimensions and contacts that particular nucleotide. Uh-huh. And we looked at a public data set that has such three-dimensional interactions in the DNA itself. What we found is that there's this massive loop, there's this massive, massive region that spans more than 2 million nucleotides that is all lumped together and connected to this FTO genetic locus. And we basically went and tested every single one of the genes in this region, and there are a total of 8 genes, to basically see if they show differences between the individuals that are predisposed to obesity and the individuals that are not. And what we found is exactly 2 genes that sit 500,000 nucleotides away and 1.2 million nucleotides away, whose expression changes a factor of 2 between the individuals that carry the risk allele and the individuals that don't. And the individuals that are predisposed to obesity have a 2-fold higher expression for those 2 genes in their fat cells. So that allowed us to now find the light bulbs, and we also predicted the upstream regulator, the finger that flips the switch, to be ARID5B, a regulator that is highly expressed in fat tissue, who actually we found was the driver. Mm-hmm. And what's really remarkable is that this whole circuit functions like a switch. If we go and mess with the regulator upstream, we can turn on or off this whole pathway. Mm-hmm. If we go and down and overexpress or repress the 2 target genes, the light bulbs, IRX3 and IRX5, we can again flip this whole pathway. And in fact, we actually went and edited a single nucleotide variant, this T2C mutation, and we took cells from individuals that carry the T allele, and we change it into a C. And we took individuals that carry the C allele, and we changed it into a T, and we found that that single letter was actually sufficient to change the expression of the two light bulbs, the IRX3 and IRX5 gene, by a factor of 2. And even more remarkably, it actually changed the entire process of heat generation by a factor of 7. So you could actually turn on or off thermogenesis simply by flipping a single letter among 3 billion letters of the human genome. That's as precise as it gets in this whole vision of the precision medicine of the future.
So that single switch would seem to be the ultimate target for any therapies. Is that right?
It's a very good question. So absolutely. So for those individuals who carry the genetic difference that predisposes them to obesity, you could actually think of a therapeutic intervention where you can let loose a virus that contains, say, CRISPR-Cas9, and goes off and edits your fat cells to change their nucleotide code to insert a C in place of a T, or to insert a T in place of a C, in order to revert that mutation. And this is certainly something that, you know, our society is struggling with right now. Like, should we be editing the human genome? Should we be improving the human race? And so on and so forth. And it's a big ethical dilemma, of course. But in this particular case, we don't actually need to edit the germline. We don't need to edit future generations. This is kind of like getting a tattoo. It will be with you for the rest of your life, but it will not get passed on to your children. You can actually go and edit your fat cells only, which, of course, you know, do not get passed on. And if you change your mind in a few years, you could go and edit them back. Huh. But, of course, this is not yet something that has been tried in clinical trials, and this is something where the technology is still emerging. But we could intervene a different way, which is perhaps much more powerful, which relies on the fact that we have now elucidated the circuitry surrounding that genetic locus. And what's really exciting about that, it is not constrained to only the individuals that carry the risk allele for the FTO region. It is actually applicable to everyone, because every individual on the planet carries this particular circuit, whether or not they have a broken switch at that particular position. So instead of just flipping the switch, we can go and flip the light bulbs directly. Basically, you know, short-circuit the wires, yeah, and turn off IRX3 and IRX5. So we actually tried that in both human cells and in mouse. And what we found is that in fat cells from individuals who carry the risk or the non-risk version of that FTO region, we could actually flip thermogenesis on or off simply by changing the expression of either one of these two genes. So those two genes suddenly become extremely important therapeutic targets, which can be targeted either using small molecules in the traditional pharmaceutical route, or by using genomic technologies such as siRNA, small interfering RNA, mm-hmm, to actually go and repress the activity of these two genes, so, and thereby turn on thermogenesis.
You in the human cells, you did this in vitro in tissue culture. In the mice, did you use in vivo editing, or were those also tissue culture studies?
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. So we did both. In mice, we went in and used three different mouse models of fat cells, mm-hmm, a white cell, a brown cell, and a mouse embryonic fibroblast that we then differentiated. Mm-hmm. And in all three cases, it worked like a switch where we could knock down, overexpress, knock out either IRX3 or IRX5 or their combination. And every single one of those modifications worked exactly as we would have predicted, turning off or turning on thermogenesis, and conversely, turning off or turning on lipid storage. But the most remarkable finding happened when we actually created a dominant negative version of the IRX3 gene, mm-hmm, one of the two targets, mm-hmm, in adipose tissue of mice. Mm-hmm. And what we found is that by repressing IRX3 using this dominant negative, specifically in adipose tissue, we could actually turn normal weight mice into thin mice. Mm-hmm. We turned normal weight mice, and that's not obese mice that have a lot of weight to lose. These are normal mice mm-hmm. that suddenly lost 50% of their body weight. All of their major fat stores were gone, and their activity level did not change significantly. Their appetite did not change significantly. The only thing that changed is whether they dissipate energy. And what was remarkable is that they were basically burning more energy when they were awake, but also when they were sleeping. It actually turned them from energy storers into energy burners. And that's very important because these were not obese mice. That basically suggests that we can take individuals that carry the risk allele or not, and regardless of what may predispose them to obesity, whether it's an environmental difference, a genetic difference, or a lifestyle difference, we could actually perhaps tune the metabolism of human cells. And of course, after clinical trials and after trying this in, you know, living, breathing humans, possibly show that we can actually change overall body weight by flipping this pathway. Yeah. And what's really encouraging here is that this particular intervention is based on human genetics. So we know that this genetic difference actually influences whole body weight being the strongest genetic association with obesity. So many previous attempts in mouse actually failed because they were sometimes lacking the human genetic component. And that has discouraged a lot of the industry away from obesity. But what's different here is that we actually have the genetic basis of this particular switch. And that allows us to now start thinking of a therapeutic approach that might actually work in a brain-independent way.
Right.
And that's just simply very exciting.
There was an editorial in the journal, and to quote, they say, there is no simple path to an anti-obesity drug that can be derived from this research. So it doesn't sound to them to be simple. And it doesn't sound to you like you're saying that it would be simple. But so there's another part of the journey. So what's next then?
So you're absolutely right. We're still a ways away from being able to develop a drug. And I want people to be very clear about that, mm-hmm. that we finally have a new path for a cure, but we're nowhere near that cure. Mm-hmm. This requires continued development. And I'm very optimistic because the technologies have been completely revolutionized over the last few years for how we can go beyond medicinal chemistry, and we can actually start thinking about much more novel ways and much more powerful ways, perhaps, of manipulating this pathway in a tissue-specific way. So what's next for us is really partnering with industry, partnering with academia, showing that manipulating this pathway can, in fact, have an effect in adult humans. And that's exactly, our work is basically cut out for us. We now have perhaps the strongest hope in recent years for flipping the equation of obesity. And we just simply need to pursue it.
Is what do you hope that clinicians and especially students clinical science will take away from this work?
I think what they should take away is keep telling people to exercise and to be healthy, because all of that basically, turns on processes in your body that are very similar to what we're talking about here in terms of burning energy, burning heat, rather than storing it as lipids. But I also want the message to be that there is new hope, that for those individuals who are unfortunately losing the battle against obesity, either because of environmental differences beyond their control, or because dieting and exercise has not worked, or because their metabolism is just working against them, and even though they're eating little, they're gaining a lot, I want the message to be that there is hope for these individuals, regardless of what the root is that actually gave them, that actually pushed them to become obese. I want to basically say that when your metabolism is working against you, we can now come and help. And it's hopefully only a few years away. And this is something that, at least within our lifetimes, has the potential to make obesity a thing of the past. And I am just simply very optimistic. This is something that's just so important to our society. The burden of obesity is tremendous. The contribution to cardiovascular disease, to type 2 diabetes, to cancer, is just costing too many lives and too much burden in our society. And this is something where if we manage to exploit this new pathway to flip the equation of obesity, it could be a societal impact.
Well, I want to thank you, Dr. Kellis, for taking the time to explain all of this today, and good luck with your continuing research.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Joe. I want to thank you for giving me this opportunity.
That was our 183rd Clinical Conversation. The others can be found at podcasts.jwatch.org. We come to you through the NEJM Group. Our executive producer is Kristen Kelly. Thank you for listening.